This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
Today on Know-How,
what to do before you give your laptop away,
and community projects. Welcome to Know How, the show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I'm your host, Brian Burnett.
And I'm Nathan Olivares-Giles.
And today, well, we're reformatting the knowledge, cloning it, and packaging it so that you can then give it away when you're done with it. And by that, I mean we're talking about reinstalling either on your Windows machine or your Mac, but also how to clone a drive if you needed to.
Yeah, basically, you've got a lot of important stuff on your laptop. You've got files that might be confidential. You've got things you might want to keep private, maybe some photos, some videos, some documents, some whatever, right?
Yeah.
And before you, whether you're giving this, you know, laptop to your little sister, to your grandma, to your best friend.
Or selling it.
Or selling it on the Craigslist or the eBays or whatever it might
I've
be.
I've heard of those.
Heard of those. Then, you know, before you list it on Craig's site, you want to make sure that it's clean and it's good to go and that you're secure and you're taking care of yourself.
Right, right. And the same applies, we're talking about in this instance, we're talking about our laptops and stuff, but the same goes for your phone.
Yes.
If you're going to be giving away a phone, or in my case, actually more recently, I had to get a refurbished phone from Google because the one I was using broke. And I, you know, didn't want to give them back the phone. I had to give them back my old phone, but I didn't want to give it back to them with all my information and stuff on that. So it's pretty easy to factory reset a phone. Like those, I think most people know.
Yeah.
But as far as like a computer, like a full-on PC or laptop, it can be a little tricky.
And this is something you want to do, to be honest, before you go to, say, like the Geek Squad at Best Buy or, you know, the Apple or Microsoft store or whatever. And in fact, usually if you're taking your device to an Apple or a Microsoft store or to wherever you might buy it from, they often will say, hey, listen, before we do some repairs on this, you got to know. Stuff might not come back the way it is.
Right.
You're taking a risk here, and if anything gets damaged, it's not on us. So these are good tips to have in general. I mean, cloning your drive before you take something in for a repair is still a good way to make sure that if something does go wrong, if you do lose any data, that you can pick up where you left off.
That's smart. Have you ever had a drive fail on you, or have you lost any data that way?
I've had portable drives fail on me, but I haven't had, thankfully, fingers crossed, I hope I'm not jinxing myself. Thanks for asking me, Ryan. I haven't had any internal drives fail yet. Now, that being said, sometimes specific files can get corrupted. I haven't had an entire drive fail on me outside of portable stuff, you know, like, and I, how that happened, I don't know, maybe it was my backpack and it hit the couch too hard that day, who knows what it was. But I've had specific files be corrupted, and that can be a real bummer. Actually, a couple episodes ago, we talked about cloud storage and the fact that you need backups for your backups, and it might sound ridiculous, but, you know, having your stuff in multiple locations is a good way to keep yourself safe if ever that does happen, so that you have some sort of redundancy and you can access, you know, what you need to when you do.
Yeah.
But I have taken, you know, laptops in. There's a dead pixel or whatever.
Right.
Taken laptops in, taken tablets in for being fixed. And in those situations, I always clone my drive before I send it over. Mm-hmm. And, of course, get rid of anything that I might not want other people to see or have access to.
Right.
You do kind of think, okay, I should be able to trust the Apple Store. I should be able to trust the Microsoft Store. I should be able to trust the Geek Squad. But you never know. One bad actor inside of a good system, and if you're the compromised party, that ain't going to be fun. So don't even want to risk that.
Yeah, and what happened to me one time is my MacBook Air was dying. Like, the mouse pad would stop working.
Oh, the trackpad,
Or the trackpad. And I had to take it in, but I wanted to clone the stuff off of it. So that's why I pulled everything off of the drive, gave it back to them. They were able to repair it, but in the process, they're like, well, to do this one part, we have to replace the motherboard. And if we do that, we have to replace your drive, so you're not going to be able to get that data back if we fix it. I'm like, go ahead, fix it, because I need it back. But I already had copied everything off
of it. See, it's a good thing you cloned it beforehand, because if you hadn't, Man, that would have just if they would have been able to get you your machine back, and then you would have been able to clone it, and then you would have had to bring it back, and yep. then had to send it back, or you might not even have that option. Sometimes they'll make the decision and not ask first. Mm-hmm. You know, you protected yourself because you planned smartly and you cloned your drive before forking it over.
And now I'm thinking about it. I probably should do it again soon before yeah. something else happens to yeah. this laptop or one of my other ones. But yeah. What software do you use when you're making your drives?
Yeah, so on Macs, I've used an app called Carbon Copy Cloner. It used to be free. Now they're charging $40 for it, but they do offer a 30-day trial. So if you're using this for the first time, you can download it and give it a shot and see if it works for you. And if you do like it, and if you think this is something you're going to be using quite often, then you can go into actually paying for it. I think it's a really great option. What's nice is you can actually boot off of that backup drive that you cloned your drive to. So if, say, you know, something goes wrong and you want to access your files on a different computer, you can actually boot off of that drive as though it were the hard drive inside of your machine.
Pretty cool.
I do got to mention that usually before I clone any drives, I do a little bit of maintenance and I do a little bit of housekeeping, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And there are a few different apps that I've used over the years on both Windows PCs and Macs. The one that I like for Macs these days, the one that I'm using the most, is called Dr. Cleaner. And this is something you can actually get in the Mac App Store. And basically, it'll just run a scan of your drive and it'll say, okay, this is what I think is a junk file. Here's what I think is, an oversized file that you might not necessarily need. You know, here are some duplicate files that you might need, you know, be willing to get rid of. That's a picture of my dad and stepmom's dog.
Looks like a little Fozzie Bear.
Yeah, it's pretty cute. So it's kind of a nice way just to make sense of what you got, so that you're saying, okay, I have this photo stored in three places, plus I got it in a couple of cloud, you know, whatever. I don't need to copy that over to an external hard drive because it's an important file, or I don't need to add that on my clone drive. If you want to keep it, you can. You can go through your stuff, kind of make sense of what you got. It's a really nice way to be able to understand what's on your drive before you clone it over, because this process takes time. It's mm-hmm. going to take time to create an actual bootable copy of your entire hard drive on your computer,
right.
which was built for over however long you've had that computer. You've been adding files. You've been removing stuff. You've been doing all these different things on that machine. And this kind of gives you a chance to say, okay, what do I really, really need? What do I want? What's important to me?
Right.
And you might find that you don't necessarily need to take, you know, every episode of Breaking Bad that you downloaded onto your laptop and, you know, a couple years ago when you mm-hmm. went on a binge or whatever.
Especially if you have it backed up somewhere else and you're like, well, you know, it's just going to make it take longer to clone,
exactly.
so I'll delete it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, going through and, like, deleting my local, photo cache or whatever for whatever Photos app I'm using, mm-hmm. I'll get rid of that because I know all my photos are in the cloud. I'm not necessarily going to need that. So basically the process that I take is I figure out what files I want or don't want, and then just leave myself with the stuff that I absolutely need that I'm going to clone. Mm-hmm. I'll clone my drive. Then I'll sign out of all of my cloud services. So I'll sign out of my, you know, iCloud account. I'll sign out of my Adobe account. I'll sign out of my Google accounts, all of these things.
Right.
And then I completely wipe the system and then reinstall the OS.
No, that's smart. If you're a Windows user, I think a program that I've used in the past to figure out what files I have, or what, it's just a good tool for even figuring out like what files are taking up a lot of space on your drive.
Yeah, which can slow things down.
Is called Winderstat.
Nice.
And it's got this kind of funky display when it goes through and searches all your files and stuff. But
I love that. It reminds me of like the old Winamp MP3 skins that I used to have in college.
It's basic, but it really shows you pretty well what files are taking up a lot of space. So and majority of the time for me, it's game files.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
What I'll do is I'll back up my game files and then delete them before I clone a drive just to cut down on that time.
Nice.
And I don't know if about you, but most of my game files are in Steam.
Uh-huh.
And yep. It's pretty easy to, if you want to, like, back up your stuff, the best way to do it is back up, So you go to, like, Steam, mm-hmm. the main Steam, backup and restore, next, and then you can select, like, all your games to back up. It'll compress them all.
Nice. So if you're playing Final Fantasy VII, you want to save your game save so that you can pick up the same spot?
Well, so you got to be careful. So this is one of the things about when you're backing up and deleting things. Some of the games, Steam will save through the cloud. Some games that aren't affiliated through Valve and stuff will save in your documents. Mm. So My Documents is definitely something you want to copy over.
Okay.
I know specifically Final Fantasy saves to the Documents folder.
Interesting.
But there are games that will save to the cloud, so you don't have to worry about that. But I like to back up my games into this compresses them, and then you move them onto another drive, and then I'll delete them.
Yeah. You know what? I actually have a Windows 10 PC that I use for my Oculus Rift headset, and that the other day just crashed,
whole
thing. Yeah, so I had to reinstall the OS. I didn't back up any of this stuff. And now I'm starting over with all of my games. I don't have any of the game saves or anything. Thankfully, because my purchases are synced across, I can download those games again.
Right.
But I didn't do that, and I burned myself the other day. So I wish I would have done exactly what you're talking about right now.
Well, some of these games are like 60 gigs.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize this until I got a message from Comcast. I have a data cap, apparently.
Yeah.
And I got close to it one time because I formatted my Xbox and my PC around the same time. I was cleaning house.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, whatever. I'll just download all those games again. You know, 50 gigs here, 50 gigs there. I got to about 800 gigabytes of download in about a two-week span.
Oof. That's half your month's allotment.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably your entire month's allotment in half the time.
In half the time,
Ooh, wow.
And
wow.
So, yeah, like Battlefield or Doom on the PC, those are both like 60 gig games.
Yeah.
So it's a good idea to kind of back those things up. And then if you have a bandwidth cap, you know, have to download them again. But I guess as far on the Windows side, for me, when I clone a drive, I've used Acronis True Image in the past.
Okay.
Now, my experience with it was I got a Kingston SSD, which came with a free copy of Acronis that I was then able to clone my main OS straight to it. And I didn't even do any house cleaning. I just straight up copied it to the SSD. Immediately it was faster, so I haven't done anything since then.
Yeah.
But if you did want to purchase it, it's $35 for like a year. And then if you want to back up more stuff, like you can back up images to a NAS or boot information or just like specific programs.
And they even offer cloud storage too, right?
And cloud storage, yeah.
Yeah. So, and Acronis, they're not just available on Windows. They're available on other operating systems too, I believe.
I think so. I've just only ever used it for my Windows machines.
Okay, I'm pretty sure, I could be wrong, that Acronis is also available on
Mac.
On mobile and,
Mac,
and
yeah.
on Macs too.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So that's another one to play around with. But so say you've done your backing up. You've cloned your drive, but now it's time to wipe the machine.
Yeah.
You know, you can do a reset. What I like to do is I make a bootable drive.
Nice.
That I just reinstall the OS. And it's pretty simple on Windows or even on Mac OS, which I'll show you both examples.
So that's a bit quicker than actually downloading the operating system from their servers and then reinstalling it on your device, right?
Right. So, and then it's nice to have a copy that if you want to install on a machine that doesn't have a disk drive, if you have multiple machines that you want to install onto and you don't want to have to re-download everything.
Yeah, every single time.
If you have an 8 gigabyte flash drive, for the case of Windows, if you want to reinstall 8 gigabyte flash drive, you go to Microsoft's webpage to download the Microsoft Windows install tool. And I think, Al, if you play that video that I made, this is the webpage that you'll see. And you just download the tool from the website, and it's pretty straightforward after that. It'll pull up. Once you start the install process, it'll pull up the dialog, and you plug in your USB. It'll find it, get a few things ready, as they say. Although this looks very Windows 8, doesn't it, Alex?
Yeah,
a little bit. I don't think they have either. But you can either upgrade your PC or create an installation media on a USB drive. And considering I'm going to probably use this drive to reinstall on this same machine that I was using, I just chose the like optimum settings for that, which you can dial in or it'll auto-detect. But then make sure to pick the right slot, because I almost picked my IO safe once, and which is my backup that's plugged in via USB that I would have destroyed that whole partition. Like, it would have wiped it. But in this case, I chose the USB, it made the disk, the boot drive, and now I can plug this into my machine, boot from the USB, and yeah. I can start the install process and format everything.
That's awesome. That speeds things up, makes it easier for you if you're doing it across multiple machines. That's really smart.
And it's pretty easy, too, for Mac. So right now, I think the latest release is Sierra.
Yes, High Sierra is next.
High
That's
Sierra's
the punchline.
Yeah.
But right now we are on Sierra.
And so what you would do is you go to the Apple Store, download Sierra.
Yep.
It took, I think, me about 20 minutes to download it. And once you have that downloaded, you can actually just do this all through Terminal. If you flip to the next slide, you can see that there's this code here. I'm not going to read it off, but I will have it in the show notes. So if you go to twit.tv/KH for this episode, you can just copy that if you like. But basically, you go into Terminal, you plug that in along with the 8 gigabyte USB that you have in your machine, and it will then take Sierra and make a bootable drive out of that USB.
Awesome.
And so then you can take that, plug it into your Mac. I think it's if you hold the command key when you boot up, it'll give you boot options and you select the USB.
Yeah, I think it's command R. Mm. I think it's command R when you're resetting your machine. What I've done in the past is I reset the machine, you hold command R, and then it'll bring up your options to wipe the entire thing and then reinstall the OS.
Yep. Yeah. So that's basically, I think that's it. I mean, some easy ways to clone your drive or make a boot disk so then you can then clean your machine, which I'm going to be doing pretty soon. I'm going to be wiping my Windows machine, but definitely.
Are you going to be giving it away?
I'm not giving it away. I just
want to start over.
I want to start on a fresh OS because what happened is, I upgraded to an SSD and it kind of. It has lessened the effect that I think Windows sometimes gets into where it kind of slows down after a long period of time, which has been less and less. I think Windows 10 is pretty good about it.
Yeah.
But I want to see if I do a clean install.
If it'll be even quicker.
If it'll be quicker. Because the SSD is so fast right now that it's like it boots up quick and stuff. And I think sometimes what I like to do is when I have a fresh install, I'll only install programs as I need them. So, I won't have all my editing software on there right away. But then it's like, oh, I have a project. I guess I'll install this now and kind of incrementally build my way back up.
Yeah.
Because otherwise what ends up happening is I install a lot of things and then I never use them again for a long time. And then there's just all these things in my repository that I just don't use.
Well, that's good advice because if you're downloading these apps and they're just taking up space, then you're doing yourself a disservice because that space you could be using for other things, it affects the speed of your machine. I've done that in the past where I've downloaded, say, Xcode or I've downloaded Motion, and it's like I'm only really at that point using Final Cut. These days, not using Final Cut as much as I used to. So, as long as you have your core projects intact, and if you have them backed up, and if you have, all your important files saved in other places, you can literally, wipe your machine. That's an okay thing to do. Or get rid of that app and kind of download it as needed because having those things sitting there taking up space, it just doesn't really make a ton of sense.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. And I don't know. What are some of the programs? Do you use anything other to clean up uninstall stuff? Or do you just go through your list and say, I don't want that anymore?
Adobe has its own uninstaller. And so I definitely have been using that. I usually just go through the applications folder. I'm one of those folks who's really hardcore about trying to keep my house digitally in order.
Because it gets overwhelming sometimes.
It gets overwhelming. Right? Alex, you can go to my desktop if you want right now. You can see my desktop. I have one folder on my desktop.
It's slate gray.
Yeah, and this is for the podcast that I make with a couple friends called Buzzkill. This is who I am. I'm not that person who just puts a bunch of stuff on my desktop. Now, if I open up folders and things like that, I have some documents, but really I try to keep my machines to what I need. What am I using this device for?
Right.
That's the stuff I want to have on here, right? What am I using my phone for? I'm not just going to download every single Wu-Tang album because I might want to listen to a Wu-Tang album over the next 10 years. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's like, no, so I'm maybe a bit on the extreme side, maybe on the OCD side of these sorts of things. One of the things that I do too is in the past when I have gotten done with, say, a video editing project or an illustration project or something like that, I will save I will basically have backups for my source files, mm-hmm. have my little vaults, I kind of save them there, and then I have my finished products. That's the sort of thing that maybe I'll keep on my local drive. But basically, when I'm done with a video editing project or I'm done with an illustration project, I get it off of that machine. Okay. I want it out of the way. I don't, you know, if next time I dip into Final Cut or I dip into Illustrator or Photoshop, I don't want to even see that stuff. It's done. It's completed. It's out of the way. And I know that my source files are protected so that if something ever happens, like my laptop gets stolen or if it falls off my copy table.
You drop and water on it or something.
Exactly. I'm not having to worry about, oh, man, did I just lose all that stuff? Like, where's my archive? And then, you know, of course, like using services like, say, Vimeo or something to upload a completed video project mm-hmm. or saving stuff in your Adobe Cloud, things like that.
Well, like, at least for me on Windows, is as I've gone along and installed stuff, there's so many things that attach themselves to startup.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, even if you go to My Machine and you can check the things that start up at the beginning if you go into Task Manager and then mm-hmm. look at the startup list. Like, just on boot up, I have the Adobe Creative Cloud, Evernote, Google Chrome, I think. Yeah, that boots up at startup. OneDrive, Skype, ProXPN, Steam. Like, a lot of these things, as you install them, just attach themselves to startup. And if you're not careful about managing what boots up with your machine, that can slow down things a lot too.
That's a really good point. That's something that you have to be diligent about. I've had that issue with Adobe Creative Cloud in the past, mm-hmm. and so I actually had to go in and turn that off because it's like, and iTunes too. iTunes used to start up every single time. It's like, well, you know what? I'm streaming a lot of music, but I'm not necessarily using iTunes to go in and control that and go through my library and tag things and categorize things the way that I used to since it's all streaming now. I don't need that to open every single time I turn on my laptop the way that I might have, like, you know, 7 or 8 years ago.
So that's part of the reason why I like to start fresh.
Yeah. You know,
start with a clean base and then build up from there.
No, that's sound advice. And again, you know, like, as diligent as I am and as you are, there can still be those times when you catch yourself off guard, like I did recently with my PC that I'm using for VR. Mm-hmm. So this is something that I try to do on a somewhat regular basis. You can think of it as like a spring cleaning annual thing if you want, but I'm really trying to do this probably like once every 3 months or so.
You seem pretty on top of it. I know we've had a couple of people here working at the studio.
Not going to name names.
Tanya, who basically, it's like the hoarding equivalent. It's like digital hoarding where they just have a bunch of stuff on their desktop and never clean anything out. And I can't feel the machine suffering. Like a little tear comes out of the USB port every once in a while and stuff.
I'm silly about it, but like I get anxiety just looking at that. I just like seriously can't handle it.
I know. I think
it's not going to happen.
I think I have a little bit of OCD when it comes to like things that boot up and my desktop layout.
Yeah, I definitely don't play around with that too much.
Cool. Well, I think we've given folks enough information. If they want to make their own boot drive or they need to clone, you can do that and start fresh. We have some community projects that I wanted to show off, but before we get to that, we're going to take a little stop for these messages.
Previously on Twit.
Took a picture of you. It says 54-year-old man wearing a hat looking happy.
I took 6 years off my age because I was wearing the hat sideways.
Yes.
Tech news today.
Axios says Google, Apple, and Amazon have spent record amounts in lobbying this year.
I think because there's so much uncertainty, I am guessing these companies feel like they have to protect themselves by getting as much opinion out there and as many people work in the system as possible.
Well, CR1 in the chat room says, why lobby by politicians direct from Amazon?
They sell everything.
Yeah.
All about Android.
Did you guys hear yesterday was World Emoji Day? Very big deal. Also, we were reminded yesterday of a very sad fact. Once Android O comes to fruition, we'll be saying goodbye to those beautiful yellow blobs. Well, now we're getting these circular guys that look like everybody else's. So there goes our individualism. But I'm not bitter. I guess we'll be okay with it.
Twit, the happiest place on earth.
The sweat face emoji is going to completely change with the new emoji in Android O. Yeah. It's going to mean sickly, as I typically use it for being anxious or nervous, which is pretty much every minute of my life.
Especially when Jason's not here.
Especially when Jason's not here.
And we're back. So, Nate, I wanted to take the opportunity to kind of spotlight some of the people in our G-Plus community, yeah. Some of the kind of the impressive and admirable projects that they've been doing, kind of in the same vein of some of the episodes we've been doing. But yeah. It's always cool to kind of get another perspective on projects that people are doing and sharing in our community.
Yeah, I'm glad we're taking the time to do this. I mean, there's always so much happening there. Obviously, every episode you hear us say, hey, join the Google Plus community, you know, share your projects, let us know, you know, what we got wrong, what we got right, how you're doing it better, how you're doing it different. Mm-hmm. The conversation never really ends there. And there's a lot of really cool stuff, people kind of taking things to the next level.
Yeah.
And
like
so,
way beyond my skill set. And they and Padres to an extent too.
Honestly, it can be a little humbling. Sometimes I scroll through that stuff and it's like, well, these folks know how even more, or know how better, or know, you know, it's cool to see. It's cool
yeah.
to see.
And so the first one I wanted to take a look at is pretty cool. And this one comes from Chris O'Reilly, and he's trying to design the perfect parachute.
Mm-hmm.
So he wrote, he basically wants a little parachutes that you throw up and you watch them come down. But anyone who's done those knows that packing and wrapping those parachutes to open at just the right time is really hit or miss.
It's tough. It's like the first time you use it is the best time.
Yeah, exactly. <It seems like. laughs> And then resetting it is the pain. But his plan is he's setting out to make a little board that will read a pressure sensor, detect when it's reached its maximum altitude, and control a servo to release the parachute perfect every time. Or at least that's his plan. He's been working on the code. He's been breadboarding with an Arduino Nano. And he's also wow. made his own custom circuit board. So if you click on his link that he posted, this goes to his website, and he kind of drills down through the things that he's working on. But this is a custom circuit board that he's built.
Wow, look how clean that diagram is. I mean, he's got some nice illustration skills there.
He's very humble, too, because he points yeah. out that he used Adobe Illustrator, I think, to make this. And he said that, you know, it was the first time he'd ever used it, and it's not really great for making circuit boards, but I think this looks great.
I think it looks fantastic.
And so he sent this in to a company that builds circuit boards, and they sent them back a prototype, and he's attached everything to it. And this is like, making your own circuit board is so far beyond what me and Padre have ever done.
Yeah, but nothing I've ever done has come close. Yeah.
So there you can see it getting milled out, and then it's on the little board there.
How cool is that?
And then he took the time to, well, he put it in a cool little jar.
Yeah.
He has the components there, all the little individual pieces that he soldered to it, which I know Alex can attest to, and I can, trying to solder surface mount stuff is a pain in the butt.
It's tough. It's tough. I hated it in high school, and I still hate it today. Soldering is not easy to do.
No. It takes a lot of focus and practice, but I mean, looking at how tiny those joints are,
wow.
he did a great job on that little board. So he's still working out all the details and some of the code and stuff, but I really wanted to show this off because he's basically making his own device. I mean, he's piggybacking off an Arduino, but
yeah,
this is pretty cool. This is like the stuff that we like to see. This is what we hope to inspire. You know, he's got it all hooked up there. So I'm looking forward to seeing the finished product because I'm a fan of those little parachute guys too. I used to play with those all the time.
Oh yeah, this is so super cool. I love the gold color he chose for, you know, for the board after it was milled.
Style like, points.
Yeah, I mean, it really looks fantastic. Before he was soldering on the pieces, it looked like something out of one of my favorite games on the Switch, and one of my favorite games of all time now is Zelda Breath of the Wild. It kind of has that look and that feel to it.
It looks like the Sheikah tablet.
Exactly. It looks like a little Sheikah slate.
I
really love it. And just the ingenuity, the creativity to say, okay, like, this is for your kids. These are parachute guys. You played with them. I played with them. He played with them. How cool is this to say, okay, there's got to be a better way. I hope he finds great success with it.
Yeah.
And hey, if he started selling them, I'd be tempted to buy one. I mean, this thing is so cool. We got to see if it works.
Yeah.
It's not done yet, of course, but this is so cool. What a neat idea.
It is. I'm looking forward to the finished product. He said, I think also in his post, that his son is 8 years old right mm-hmm, now. He's mm-hmm. hoping to have it done by the time he's 9. So he's giving himself a year to work on it.
It's going to take some time. It's going to be a process, but I know I'll be watching Know How to see how this plays out in, you know, a few months to a year. I hope you revisit this and we see the finished product. Love to see a video of it in action on YouTube or whatever.
Yeah.
This is cool.
Yeah. And you know what? I can see this going in other directions too, where if I wanted to like throw a GoPro up in the air with a parachute attached to it and make it, you know, make sure that the parachute deploys as it hits its apex.
Yeah, and then starts filming and does it all.
Yeah, it'd be kind of a neat little project.
Now you're talking. I like your creativity piggybacked on his innovation. This is so cool.
There's all the different avenues that these projects can go. And then the next one that I want to take a look at, this is kind of a mod on top of the fidget spinners that Padre and I designed a few episodes back.
Those things are everywhere. I swear, I have my... you know, high school cousins sending me videos of this on Snapchat to, like, my 32-year-old friends sending me videos of theirs on Snapchat. It seems like everybody's playing with these fidget spinners.
It's crazy. You either love them or you hate them. They're very popular right now. When we were growing up, I want to say, like, Tamagotchis, Pogs.
Yeah, Tamagotchis, like, Pogs, marbles and steelies.
Yep.
Basically all the things that at school they said you couldn't play with.
Yep. Marbles makes you want to play with them
Oh,
more.
But then you got steelies. Can't have that.
Can't have
Oh, pogs are cool. Oh, you got a slammer. You can't have that. You know what I'm saying? You know what we're talking about right there.
Yep.
Fidget spinners are that thing. It's like fidget spinners, and then there's that water bottle game. Have you seen the water bottle flipping game that kids are playing these days?
No. I'm way out of it, I guess. Yeah, what's the water bottle
flipping? Alex, I'm sure there's some videos on YouTube, but basically kids... it's amazing and also kind of insane and frustrating at the same time. Kids are drinking their, like, water bottles down to, like, halfway or three quarters or, you know, one fourth, whatever.
And then
they flip the bottles up so that they land perfectly, like, just flat.
Yeah.
And then they make, like, little YouTube videos of this. So I went back to visit some family a few months ago back in Phoenix. And all the kids in the family were just sitting there flipping the damn water bottles on the table the whole time. And all the adults were like, stop doing that. Why are you doing? Because, you know, it's noisy and the crinkle, you know, it's like cheap crinkle plastic on these disposable water bottles. Oh, yeah. It's terrible. But that is a big, big hit. So I feel like fidget spinners and water bottle flipping.
It's a way of distracting yourself.
This is the phenomena that we live in these days.
It can be irritating to an outsider, but when you actually start playing with a fidget spinner or something, you're like, oh, yeah, okay, I get the appeal. Like,
yeah.
And then you find yourself just sitting there for a few minutes.
Well, you know, like when I was a kid, it might have been like a pen that you've, like, flipped back and forth. You kind of find little things.
I always try to do the flip the pen around your finger.
Yeah, you know, it's like we've all had our little things. You can see the lineage of the fidget spinner. And as much as you might want to hate on it now that, you know, we're adults and we're like, oh, that's just, I don't get that. It's you were that kid once too.
Well,
in your own way.
Totally going to destroy this poor guy's last name, but I'm pretty sure it's Martin Zabrowski. He designed his own fidget spinner, but what he did that differentiated it from the ones that me and Padre made were we used metal bearings in the middle, and he actually, I think he has one in there, but he used a 3D printed cap.
Wow.
And he actually has, if you look closely at that photo, there is like an initial on there. Mm-hmm. So I think he was making it for his niece and he put her initial on it and
that's adorable. Just,
yeah, customized it for her and stuff. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it might be even fun to take like a little sticker and kind of place it there or mix up the colors. But I mean, you know, adding the initial for a family member, like, that's awesome.
Yeah, and it pretty much comes back to, like, me and Padre made something, but then people took it and they've customized it for their own thing, and now they're giving it out as gifts to their family and stuff.
Yeah, they're making it their own.
Yeah, exactly, which is what we're trying to do on this show. We give you knowledge so you can make your own stuff.
Yeah.
The next one I thought was pretty cool. It came from Ken Janseff, and he had a MakerBot 3D printer, and one of the downsides of that printer is it doesn't have an enclosure, which if you've ever tried to 3D print something in a kind of breezy atmosphere, that can ruin your print because it cools things down when they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
So he actually... He went to IKEA. He bought some of these, I guess they're called LAC tables?
I have a LAC coffee table. It's about the size of maybe three of these sitting next to each other. And I have a LAC bookshelf. I think my LAC coffee table is like $50. So these tables themselves must have been pretty cheap because they got to be cheaper than that.
Pretty cheap. And what he did is he 3D printed these holsters so that he can hold these tables together.
Nice.
He took some plexiglass. He took a few LEDs. And he built this enclosure for his 3D printer. And it was, I mean, I thought, I like the concept of building tools like this from your 3D printer for your 3D printer.
Yeah.
Like, it's a little Inception-y or kind of meta, like,
yeah,
3D
definitely.
Printed parts for your 3D printer.
Well, it's nice. It raises it up, you know, it gives it a nice accessible height. But also, you know, you could put your spools maybe beneath the first table since it's two tables stacked on top of each other. Mm-hmm. You can place stuff on top of that. You can kind of keep all of your gear in one space and give it some nice style, too.
I love how he has a temperature sensor there, too, so he can keep an eye on making sure that it stays at a level temperature, which is really important when you're printing.
Definitely.
And then when he has the whole thing assembled, he's got, like, handles and stuff on it.
Yeah, plexiglass windows.
He's got ventilation. He's got the little PC fan there, too.
Yeah.
So, pretty cool project. I thought that was... He in his words, said that that it was a bit janky, because that's like what me and Project call our projects.
It's an IKEA hack, you know, but it's a great one.
And I think it's pretty
Look how functional it is.
Yeah, and I think he did a great job on it.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything janky about that project.
Yeah.
The sheer fact that he has handles on the door and stuff,
yes.
Like that... That's some pretty good detail there, Ken. So
no, it's
bravo.
Great. It's great imagination. It's great execution. And, you know, what's cool about it is it's like literally the sort of thing that so many people would just walk by mm-hmm. every day. Just a little side table. Probably cost $25 or something like that.
Yeah.
There's an IKEA store in most major cities or whatever. You can get it online. But he saw, you know, the potential in this like little table, built it into something special and something unique. But what's so cool about it is, you know, any one of us can make that. You know, you can go to an IKEA and get those tables.
Yeah.
Hopefully he has his designs so that people can download those on, you know, whatever sharing space. But, you know, if you're in the know-how community
mm-hmm.
And you're looking for a solution, there are options like this that are just sitting right there for you
yeah.
to find, to be inspired by, to find, in, you know, as we were talking about with the fidget spinners, make it your own, you
mm-hmm.
know? It's like you can use a different color of wood, you can paint it, you can use different materials, whatever. Maybe you have, you know, some vintage side tables that you got at a yard sale or whatever.
Right.
You know, you can kind of find your own way. But what a cool, inspiring jump-off point
yeah.
for your project if you're looking for something similar, if you have a similar problem, whatever.
Yeah, that's why I love the community is I look there for inspiration. But there's a lot of people who come to me and say, like, well, I want to get into working with Arduinos. I want to, like, use a 3D printer.
I want to try out Raspberry Pi.
But, like,
or, yeah.
what project do I start with?
Yeah.
And really what it comes down to is what problem do you want to solve? What are you passionate about? When I play with the Raspberry Pi, I want to build a retro game machine out of
yeah.
it. That's how I got into playing with Raspberry Pis, which then led it into making security cameras out of it and Alexa out of it.
Yeah.
As far as Arduinos, like, we just wanted to make a simple servo that would, like, open and close a flap. And so we started, that was, like, our first project with our Arduino. And then
yeah.
it built to something else and something
yeah.
else. And so it kind of snowballs from there. But if you have a problem that you need to solve, like, I think one of the other projects was somebody's refrigerator door would open. They wanted to build a sensor that would alert them if their door had opened. And so they had an Arduino. They had never used an Arduino before. Got an Arduino, built a sensor to connect to the door, and then it would beep whenever the door would open.
Yeah.
Simple stuff like that. But that's like your introduction into these projects.
I love those sorts of things because that, to me, is, you know, why I've always been interested in technology and always involved in it in some way, whether it's, you know, back in the day, like building, you know, websites as like a teenager, or today, you know, doing stuff here, learning from you guys and sharing ideas, is simply like not tech for tech's sake, not just doing something because you can, which is cool and that's
yeah.
fine,
yeah.
but really, like, this is how we can use these things, these ideas, this stuff in our daily lives. This is how it can make us more productive, make it more entertaining, make it more fun, you know, whatever it is. You know, starting with the problem and then finding the technology to serve your solution. That, to me, is the coolest part about all this stuff. Not just building something as a science project, but building something you can live with every single day.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are the projects that you do that you hang on to.
Exactly.
But if any of these problems, if you ever had a problem finding the stuff that we talked about,
mm-hmm.
there's
mm-hmm.
a place where people can find all the information of the things that we went over today, like from the software cloning, the cloning software, to how to make a boot drive and the code or the command that you'll need for that if you're doing it on the Mac OS
yep,
side.
Yep.
You can find all that information at twit.tv/KH, where our episodes live. You can thumb through our our past library. If you've ever missed an episode, you could fix that problem by subscribing or download an episode to view it later or on whatever device that you're using. And like we've mentioned in this whole show, we have a community. It's on Google Plus. Everyone says Google Plus is dead, but not necessarily when it comes to collaborating in these.
Not
kind
if
of,
you're hanging out in the know-how Google
that's
Plus.
Right, that's right.
Your Google Plus might be dead, but know-how's Google Plus is alive and well. It's
that's
kicking.
True.
It's probably it's keeping the whole dang thing alive, man.
Well, I don't use it like a social network. Yeah. I use it as
it's almost like a forum.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a great place for posting your projects, for asking questions, showing us up with your stuff. And like today, if you have a project that you're proud of and you want to present it, put it in there. We'll pick it up, we'll show it, put it on the show, and thank you for contributing to everything. But as far as if you want to ask us questions directly or you want to see what we're working on outside of Know How or what might be coming up on a future episode, the best place to do that is to follow us on Twitter. I am at @cranky_hippo.
And I am at @NateOG.
And we have a third member of the team, Hal Gurney, who pushes the buttons. He sits behind the desk there.
Excuse me, Brian, that's Alex Gumpel.
I feel like I pronounced it right. Ah, all right.
That's close enough.
Yeah, actually, that's pretty close.
Nate, sounds the same.
Nate, can we see your empty gray desktop one more time?
Yeah, actually.
That was really cool. I just wanted to just get another look at that. Okay. Oh, wow, look at that.
Wow. Keeping it really basic.
You know,
I
got to say, you can see where my inspiration lies.
Yeah, you're gonna show us what's inside of your thing there. Oh, wow. Look at that. You got
read
speech
me.
Text.
You're keeping it.
You got HyperCard.
Oh, there's one thing I love. It's some HyperCard. It's some HyperCard.
You're old school, Nate.
I'm an old soul. That's what they say. I'm an old soul.
Well, I think that should do it for this episode. Now that you know how to build your own boot disk and clone your drives, go do it.